Look at this.
We all set, Esther? Oh, we are 2 minutes early. All right, we'll go for it anyway. Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Julie Fedorchak, a commissioner at the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. Today is Wednesday, March 25th, and I would like to call this meeting to order. First off, a few opening comments this morning, not a lot from my perspective, but I did just want to mention that the work on our budget continues. We have another subcommittee meeting today in House Appropriations Subcommittee, Energy and Education, or Education and Environment. Forget what they call that committee. Anyway, that meeting will be at 2:30, and they have requested to hear from the Federal Rail Administration to get more details directly from them on the state rail programs, how they work in combination with the federal program, how the inspectors, what kind of authority they have, and a whole variety of issues that they have questions with the FRA. So I think that's a good thing. They're still digging. They're still trying to figure out what this program is and how it might work in North Dakota. I've welcomed the debate and the serious questions that they have offered, and I'm really hopeful that they ultimately decide to fund the program and kick off this state rail safety program in North Dakota. I think it's important for the citizens. I think it's important for our two largest industries that rely almost entirely on rail for transport of their product. And I think it's very appropriate and necessary at this time for the state to invest in this safety program to ensure the safety of the rail system and work to ensure the safety of the rail system in our state. So with that, I would say I don't have any other opening comments. I kick it over to my colleague, Commissioner Christman.
I really have no opening comments other than to just point out that we're right in the middle of kind of a real hectic scheduling streak between the legislature being in town and all the infrastructure applications that we have on our plate and are out on the road quite a bit because, of course, those all came in at various times throughout the late fall and winter, but all are hoping to have it completed and start construction by spring. So it's quite a surge of activity, and our staff is, I think, really being pushed to the limits of what can be expected of people in trying to accommodate all these things, and frankly, sometimes the companies bear some responsibility in turning things in incomplete or a little too late, but sometimes it's just the way things are. But I really appreciate all the efforts that our staff is putting forth. It seems overwhelming to me sometimes just getting to the right meetings on the right days, but when I take time to reflect on all the work our staff has done in preparing us for those meetings, it's, I think, pretty admirable.
That is very well said. The staff is working late hours and under some pretty demanding conditions to get through the applications and make sure that we're not shortchanging any of the review process. And I really want to echo Commissioner Christman's appreciation and thanks, especially to the folks over there in PUD. The beleaguered folks over in PUD. You guys are doing a good job and just want to keep it up. Commissioner Culk.
Thank you, ma'am. I would echo what both my colleagues said. Last week we had three commission hearings. Tomorrow I think we're in Watford City, so it doesn't let up at all. So, and everybody's doing a really good job. I saw some stuff from Jim Deutsch and his crowd upstairs. We've got some coal mine projects in front of us right now that are very important, so it's the full gamut. So thank everybody for that. The let's see here. I did have a quick note. We're going to send a press release out tomorrow, but I got a phone call slash email from the FERC yesterday, and they're having their Central Region Technical Conference next Tuesday, March 31st in St. Louis. And Commissioner Christman went to the one that was out in D.C., but in this one in St. Louis, they asked me to participate in one of the technical committees. And I think it's basically tied into the background that I have at NARUC and the Clean Coal Committee plus the generation and transmission. So I'll be going down there next Tuesday. I think it's a great opportunity to all the work that the three of us and staff have done on those symposiums we held, as well as the comments we filed with the EPA, get to present that information directly to the FERC. And, of course, Tony Clark, my former colleague, will be on there. Colette Honorable, I know her very well from – she was Arkansas commissioner, so it should be a good crowd. But, you know, we got all this stuff going on now, but I still think the thing that's right now that's threatening us the most in North Dakota is that CO2 plan, the clean energy plan. That could really reshape the way not only North Dakota but the country manages the power and power grid, and reliability is still, in my mind, a big concern. So that's a good opportunity. We'll be down there next week. And to kind of caveat on what Commissioner Fedorchuk teed up in the rail thing, I haven't really said too much about the budget this time, just kind of watch how it plays out. But we know we have the three positions we asked for, one additional natural gas, one weights and measures, and one public utilities. I still think those are the highest priority, and we haven't had much discussion on that from the committee, so hopefully those are still going to be in there. But as this rail discussion has evolved, I think I've really leaning more and more and more to we really have to have some type of PSC presence for the state inspection program. And I'll tell you, the biggest reason I've kind of broadened my viewpoints on that is I really feel that the safest way to move a product is a pipeline. There's no question about it. But North Dakota, we continue to do the process. We go through the review. We make our decisions on pipelines. We're seeing states to our borders that are not approving these pipelines. They're not even discussing them. So whatever rail traffic, oil traffic is moving by rail now, there's no fix to that. It's not like we've got pipeline projects that are in the queue to move 400,000 barrels a day from the railroads to the pipelines. That's not happening. The pipeline debate around the country is completely hung up. And you see, you know, states like Minnesota, Governor Dayton has become very vocal, as well as his crowd, about what his concerns are about rail safety, but yet they won't move on the pipelines. So the point is that I think that if we're going to continue to be an oil producer, and we want to do that, we're going to need to make sure we have a state interest and a state program to broaden some of this, because the rail programs are going to continue to carry this much oil. So I think it's just prudent that we invest some state resources into that. Now, whether it's one inspector instead of three, I think that we'd just like to get something going this session and see how it all plays out. But I'm looking forward to that meeting at 2:30 and seeing how the governor put it in his budget. It came out of the Senate committee in their budget. So it'll be very interesting to see what the House does. And, of course, I personally won't say much until that comes out of there. But then we'll have to make some decisions. So other than that, I look forward to a good meeting.
Madam Chair, if I could just elaborate, I didn't want to steal Commissioner Kalk's thunder on being invited to that EPA session.
Absolutely.
But, you know, having sat in on the one in Washington, D.C., their first one, that is a big honor for you, certainly, to be invited to be on that panel in front of the FERC commissioners. It's also a very key strategic moment for North Dakota, because I'll tell you that they really grilled their panelists in D.C. there wasn't a similar story to North Dakota's being told there either, and so I think it's really important, because I don't know how much EPA will concern themselves with what FERC thinks of their plans, but certainly they ought to. You know, FERC is an important agency that EPA ought to give consideration to. So you getting a North Dakota voice into their mix, I think, is vitally important, and I'm really glad that they invited you and that you're able to go.
Excellent. All right. Well, moving on to our agenda, we have a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Moving into our regular agenda, I have two items in my portfolio, two motions. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC Demicks Lake Gas Processing Plant, McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-14-764.
Second.
This was an application we received last fall for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a new Demicks Lake gas processing plant 13.5 miles northeast of Wofford City that would process up to 400 million standard cubic feet of gas per day. We had the hearing February 9th in Teddy's Residential Suites in Wofford City. And reviewed the whole application. Basically, this project will consist of two cryogenic turbo expander processing units, my personal favorite, gas processing units. Pleased that they chose those.
Anytime you can use the word cryogenic.
Yeah. And turbo expander. I like turbo expanders in my wardrobe. each unit capable of processing 200 million standard cubic feet per day of wellhead gas gathered from local crude production well sites. The anticipated cost of the project is $642 million. Plans are to construct this on approximately 160 acres of land owned by One Oak northeast of Watford City. The project will process natural gas liquids to produce propane, butane, natural gasoline, pipeline-grade natural gas, methane, and ethane. One Oak completed all of the necessary cultural resource studies, all the agency consultations, and all the wildlife and environmental studies. And in September, the SHPO indicated their concurrence with a no significant sites impacted by the project. Also, One Oak has submitted or is in the process of submitting applications for a conditional use permit in McKenzie County and an air and water quality permit with the ND Department of Health. And One Oak will obtain these permits prior to engaging in construction activity for which the various permits are required. They evaluated the study in area and site for exclusion and avoidance areas. Aside from a 8.7 acres of prime farmland, there are no exclusion areas. And the same is true for avoidance areas with the exception of 0.02 acres of wooded woodlands. One Oak will coordinate with local authorities and emergency managers regarding emergency response procedures. Their emergency response plan will include this project. And they testified that based on the blast study performed by One Oak, no impacts to occupied residences located at least 1/2 mile from the project are expected to occur. They also mentioned that their facility is designed to be safe for workers who are located in a building on site. And so in their design of the facility, they attempt to keep that building outside of the blast radius as well. So any residences located outside of the project area should be well within the safeguards of the operations of the site and well outside of any blast risks. One Oak's environmental consultant testified that stormwater runoff at the site will be adequately contained within an on-site detention pond designed specifically for this purpose. And there was extensive discussion on that subject during the hearing. So we've reviewed the project. One Oak has actually notified us that they will not, they will be delaying plans to construct this project based on some of the declines in production. And when that production increases again, plan to move forward with the construction, but there isn't any set date for that at this point. But they did request that we move ahead and complete the application process and give them a decision so that they should production increase to the point they can move forward and get construction underway. So we have done that, and I support this order that includes a requirement that One Oak will obtain the conditional use permit from McKenzie County prior to engaging in construction activity for which the permit is required. So that kind of summarizes that proposal in that order.
And we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
So, all right. my second motion, I move the commission deem complete the application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and for a route permit conditioned on receiving from the applicant 10 days prior to the first hearing in this case, the wetlands and water body field survey report, the wildlife inventory field survey report, the habitat assessment field survey report, and the tree and shrub inventory report in Dakota Access Pipeline Project citing application case number PU-14-842. I further move the commission issue a notice of filings and notice of hearings in Dakota Access LLC, Dakota Access Pipeline Project, citing application case number PU-14-842.
Second.
This is a very significant new pipeline proposal that this company, Energy Transfers Company, has submitted to the PSC. They filed the application on December 22nd. It's for a route permit and corridor compatibility for approximately 358 miles of 12, 20, 24, and 30-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Montreal, Williams, McKenzie, Dunn, Mercer, Morton, and Emmons counties, North Dakota, with terminals near Stanley in Montreal County, near Tioga in Williams County, Epping and Trenton, also in Williams County, Watford City in McKenzie County, and Johnson's Corner in McKenzie County. On December 22nd, they also filed an application for waivers of procedures and time schedules and requesting that we have combined hearings on the route and corridor applications. The commission deemed these complete, conditioned on the number of studies that I mentioned earlier being filed 10 days prior to the hearings that we will schedule during our scheduling portion of our admin meeting. And those hearings will be held in Williston, Kildare, and Mandan, North Dakota, to give the public ample opportunity to attend and express their interests and concerns and get their questions answered about the project. I did want to just talk a little bit about the project. I've gone through, you know, not in real thorough, but I've gone through the application, gave it a once over before the meeting today. This project will have the capacity for up to 570,000 barrels per day of crude based on demand. They say 450,000 barrels per day is their target. It will cross seven counties in North Dakota, 358 miles, with six different terminals for receipt. The total pipeline is 1,150 miles, and it traverses through North Dakota, South Dakota, Illinois, and completes its route in Illinois, and the total price of the project is $3.78 billion. The North Dakota portion is $1.4 billion. It's an interesting project, and I will just take a moment to explain it because I think it's different than what I've seen in projects like this in the past. But there's two portions. There's a supply line and a main line, and it loops in a C-shaped and exits goes southeast across the state. But it starts in Stanley, and it's a 12-inch line in Stanley. And there's some tanks in a 120,000-barrel tank in Stanley. And a 12-inch pipe travels to the Ramberg facility, where there's three tanks, 100,000, 150,000, and 200,000 capacity, barrels capacity. And then the pipe increases to 20 inches and goes to Epping, North Dakota, where there is 100,000, 150,000 barrel tanks. Then it remains 20 inches, travels to Trenton, North Dakota, and there's two tanks there, 100,000, 150,000 barrel capacity. Then it increases to 24 inches, travels 48 miles to Watford City, where there's two tanks, 100 and 150,000 barrel tanks. Then it travels, it increases to 30 inches to Johnson's Corner, where there's two 200,000 barrel tanks. And then it becomes the main line where it is 30 inches and goes 210 miles kind of at a diagonal then after it takes the sea around the lake and it takes a diagonal across the state through Dunn, Mercer, Morton, Emmons counties, exiting into South Dakota down there in Emmons County. In the application, the company mentions that they anticipate the project will create 12,000 construction jobs. There will be 195 million in easement payments added or paid for this project. I believe that's for the whole route, not just in North Dakota. And in terms of alternatives, they did calculate that the would relate to approximately 6 to 7 crude trains per day, the capacity of this pipeline. So it's a significant new investment being proposed in our state. We've received a fair number of public comments already. I checked the file this morning. We've had 16 people file comments with us, concerns of a variety of different natures, some that are not within our jurisdiction and some that are. And so I anticipate these hearings to be pretty long and thorough and have a lot of public input, and we'll take our time and do what's needed to do a really thorough review of this project and make sure that all the I's have been dotted and the T's have been crossed in the review of this project, which is proposed in our state. And as I, which I had also mentioned, as Commissioner Kalk mentioned earlier, as we debate the various forms in this country of transportation of crude oil, there's only three options: pipeline, train, and truck. And so, you know, there's pros and cons of each of them, and they all become evident whenever you review an application for a project like this, and you have to weigh those against the other alternatives as well. And so I urge the public to be engaged in this process.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just add two quick thoughts. This has got to be the longest pipeline that's been involved in siting in North Dakota, maybe ever, just the way it lays out there. I'll have to have our public utilities gurus check that out. Pat, is anything longer than this? I don't think so. it'll be a very, very large project. You know, we learned a lot of lessons in the Enbridge pipeline as we cited that one. But I look at this application, the two things that jump out at me that won't be necessarily under PSC jurisdiction, but it'll be interesting to watch, is there's two river crossings involved. And the commission has approved pipelines that have gone under the river before, contingent upon final Corps of Engineer approval, because, of course, they authorize the water body movement. So it'll be interesting to watch the discussion with the company and the Corps of Engineers as it crosses, because it crosses the river twice. And then the second thing that jumps out to me, too, is that whenever we go into different jurisdictions, where it exits North Dakota obviously needs to be where it enters South Dakota. So it'll be interesting to watch how they do their timing and filings in South Dakota, because I know that in cases we had a power line coming from Minnesota to North Dakota, the Minnesota route had already been determined, so it really cut down some of the flexibility of what you do in North Dakota. So those two things I think will be very interesting to watch, and I look forward to our own hearings. But those are things that I think could affect our hearings, our route selection, if as they get approval or not approval in those different areas. So thank you.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I will say, you know, that it's going to be interesting hearings. I don't know if you mentioned it, but I presume that we're would be having multiple hearings on this.
Three.
Three is what you're thinking. Yeah. So it's not like people are going to have to drive from Williston to Linton to attend a meeting or the other way around. We're going to make sure that people are able to be heard. And that's an important part of it, because we want to make sure that from an environmental perspective, from dealing fairly with the landowners along the way, and that all those things are done right. But from the other side of the coin, I look at a pipeline project like this and think, you know, my personal opinion is that if this were in place, it would probably solve a great deal of the problems that we have sporadically with not being able to get grain shipped out of North Dakota. It would probably solve most of the problems that we have with rail safety, mm-hmm. and would relieve a lot of people of the headaches that they have, the congestion in small towns when trains are parked on the only opportunities for trains to pass one another, which in many of those cases is in those towns. And so there's certainly positives as well as the potential negatives to look at in these hearings. And this is a big, big project for the state of North Dakota, and is certainly going to fill our plates and hopefully not just too dramatically overwhelm our staff.
I do want to just also mention there is at least two river crossings, but I think there's more. It's just there's smaller rivers, and I've seen some public comment on rivers that aren't the Missouri or Lake Skagway, so I think that there's multiple river crossings in addition to that. So,
a great point. You'd have all the other ones along the way.
Yep.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Kalk, Commissioner Christman doesn't have any today.
I'll say, Madam Chair, I have one motion on admin, but other than that, the grain licensing and reclamation and everything has been quiet the last couple of weeks. So we'll have more coming up in the future, but nothing today.
Awesome. No doubt there'll be more in the future. All right, Brian.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Item BK1. I move the Commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order in Public Servants Commission Northern Excavating Inc. damage prevention enforcement cases that are listed in the announcement. I'm not going to go through and read all the different case numbers, but they're all listed in the announcements.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. I think what I'll try to do, rather than go through every one individually, there's a lot of commonality in most of these, so I'll hit the general topics, and then there is a couple that jump out, and then I'll maybe open it up for questions at the very end, of course. But a little background, in December of 2003, reservation telephone, I'm sorry, 2013, we were a little bit late, but not a decade late, right, Victor? The reservation telephone, RTC, filed with the Public Service Commission 7 one-call complaint forms alleging violations by Northern Excavating Company, Northern, a North Dakota company. In December of 2013, advocacy staff sent Northern a copy of the complaint forms and requested a response. In January of 2014, Robert Lindberg, president of Northern Excavating Company, filed a response on the behalf of North Dakota. So basically, I'll kind of jump through. In 2014, there was a lot of discussion back and forth with the advocacy staff and Mr. Lindberg about how to deal with all these cases, different responses back and forth. Quite honestly, there was even we had to certify things to the sheriff one time to make sure we got the individual properly notified. So there was certainly a delay in this, but a lot of delay was going through the legal process, and people have their rights and those kind of things, which of course you're going to follow. But this is the first time that I'd really ever seen where there was almost an adversarial relationship from the start with the staff. But I do appreciate staff's tenacity going through this. So through the end of 2014, the staff got all this organized, and in November of the last year, we issued a notice of consolidated hearing and complaints, scheduling the hearing for December 5th, 2014, right here at the Capitol. Now, and then in December 3rd of 2014, the Commission granted a request for continuance. So we had a hearing scheduled. The individual requested a continuance, so we granted one continuance. And so then we rescheduled it for February 3rd, 2015 at 9 a.m. Central in the Commission hearing room. And the plan was that there, basically in this case, there was, there was actually 8 cases dealing with reservation telephone and Northern Excavating, and there was 6 cases dealing with Northern Excavating and MDU. So the goal was on February 3rd to have a full day of hearing and cover all these cases, but quite honestly, the day got away. We started early, and by the end of the day, 5 o'clock, we'd only finished the reservation telephone, so we basically stopped at that time, and now we're going to reschedule the 6 additional cases where Northern Excavating has complaints filed by MDU on it. So this is not the end of the Northern Excavating cases by any means. There's still 6 more to go. So in the process of the hearing, of course, Northern Excavating is a Jamestown company. Reservation Telephone has main offices in Partial, North Dakota. In the different cases, it really comes down to, I'm going to read through one of them, but Northern Excavating, for the first case, for example, PU 13877, in late July of 2013, Northern provided an excavation notice to North Dakota One Call. The next month, Northern began excavation as defined in North Dakota Century Code in the area of Ross, North Dakota. Our reservation telephone facilities were damaged. Reservation in this particular case testified that in this case it was $3,653 of damages. In this case, Cassie Steele, who the line locator for RTC, testified that when she was out there, the line was properly marked. She testified that the lines were visible when she arrived. The witness, Kyle Benson from Northern Excavating, he testified that the markings were in place and that he did call Mrs. Steele from RTC and notified her that Northern hit the RTC line. So in all the cases except for one, it's the same scenario where they did call in, they had a proper locate, but the company didn't do the things they're supposed to do, and they hit the facilities. And the witness, in all the cases except for one, basically Northern's witness said, yeah, we did it. And he admitted it. So it was interesting, the process, when Mr. Lindbergh testified. He talked about soil conditions being of concern and all this, but when his own witness got up, he basically said, yeah, we did it, and it just was an interesting hearing. But the point being that we went through all these cases, and in my mind, they were all very cut and dried except for one of them. There was one of the cases, PU 13-882. In that particular case, there was some, I would say, vagueness that developed between the testimony of RTC witness as well as Northern Excavating. And really, I think in that case, this order today recommends no fine in that particular case because it wasn't clear that the mark was properly made. It wasn't clear that they didn't use the care required. So in six of these cases, there's a fine that I'm recommending today, but in that one, there will be no fine. So I think what it shows is our staff really does a good job of looking through all the issues, and the commissioners themselves ask the right questions that we treat every individual case on its own merits. So good work. And I think Commissioner Crispin really pointed that out during the hearing, so I thank you, Randy, for that. Okay, so what we really have is the initial staff recommendation for these seven cases really started out at roughly $1,000 proposed fine. The first one ended up at $4,000 for the second one. And so when we initially set this up, it was $17,000 of fines were recommended by the staff. But in the process of the work session, one of the things that the three of us talked a lot about is we put an escalator in for the fines. The first violation, it's X amount of dollars. The second one, it's an escalator. And so staff, when they put these recommendations together, use the escalator all the way through all these cases. But in the work session, I think we talked about, why we think the escalator is a good idea, good process. These all happen in relatively the same period of time, and it just didn't seem appropriate to implement the escalator in this case. So we chose to not do that in the work session. I think that's fair. So at the end of the day, what it comes out to is there's going to be $8,000 of fines levied to Northern Excavating for their violations of one call. And if you total up all the damages in the cases where we found them to be being careful and prudent, the damages in this particular case are $21,959. So what this order does today is it says they owe the state of North Dakota General Fund $8,000 for fines, and they're required to reimburse Reservation Telephone $21,959.82 in damages. So really, this is almost $30,000 that the company Northern Excavating is liable for based on this order. Let me look through here again. But really, I think all the cases were very similar, that they did do the locates, they didn't do the care required. I think staff did a very good job of setting it up. It's unfortunate that it took so long to get to hearing, but we make sure everybody gets their careful process of review. And I really think that's probably it. There'll probably be some questions, or I don't know if my colleagues have anything else, but I think we worked through the process. I think it's a very good result. The next motion is very similar. It actually deals with the second half of that hearing that we had scheduled in the third. So there is one more from Northern Excavating that will be the next motion. So that's all I have.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, I have a concern with the next one, I guess, more than this one. But I think in this case, you mentioned a long, drawn-out hearing, and that's really what it was. But I think it was a very useful hearing. I think any contractor who is listening in, or who hear, and it's unlikely that that will be a lot of them, but they'll hear about this and hopefully realize that you, just because you're in a hurry, you can't just go tearing in everywhere. So I hope that we're sending that message loud and clear. But there's also a process that needs to be followed, and just because someone's accused, they still get their opportunity for a hearing and that sort of thing, and we have had that, and will, I presume, unless it's somehow resolved in the meantime, still have another one on the other cases. So I think this is a good demonstration of the process working correctly, and appreciate your active role in making sure that as our one call system has evolved, that we've gotten to this point where we have a good hearing process and a good resolution process.
Just a couple additional thoughts here. This was the contractor in this case was experiencing some difficult circumstances. It was wet. He talked a lot about how challenging this was, and it was a challenging contract for him. And so, you know, that compounded problems, and he just really seemed very, very frustrated with the whole project. And it was unfortunate because this is a longtime North Dakota business that we're dealing with, not a new one or somebody that doesn't know the laws. So, you know, we did take a lot of time and try to work through this in a very fair manner. But two things really struck me about the whole process and the involvement with the contractor in this case. First of all, they didn't excavate in a careful and prudent manner. They just didn't. And he almost seemed surprised a bit by some of the requirements of what that means. And I'm just going to read what's required because I wonder how many contractors out there have never read the actual requirements that they must follow and how much responsibility they have to avoid underground infrastructure. So the law says you must excavate within 24 inches of the outer edges of an underground facility located manually and marked by the owner or operator by stakes, paint, or other customary manner and supporting and protecting the uncovered facility. So you have to – there's a lot required of the contractors in these circumstances. It is their responsibility to avoid this infrastructure and not wreck it, and there really is no excuse for hitting it, and that's allowed. Secondly, in this case, when you damage infrastructure, work with the owners of the infrastructure. That did not happen in this case. The owners of the infrastructure could not get a hold of the guy. He was just completely uncooperative. And had he been more cooperative, the owners of the underground infrastructure would have worked with them. And we wouldn't have gotten this case. There probably wouldn't have been a fine. And it would have all been settled outside of this process, which is ultimately, I think, the best way to do things. So know what you're doing, and when you make a mistake, work with the contractors or work with the owners of the underground infrastructure to fix it and come up with some sort of a solution that's satisfactory for everyone involved. There's just too much work going on in our state, and there's that people just have to be taking the time and knowing what the rules are and training their staff to follow the rules to avoid this underground infrastructure. It's absolutely vital for our communities.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. Item BK2. I move the Commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law and order, and Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Inc. 4-5 second time damage prevention enforcement case number PU14-134.
Second.
The reason this particular one is broken apart is the first block was one filing that came to the Commission. We consolidated. This one was actually part of some of the MDU cases that we'll hear later, so we pulled this one out today. That's why it's its own standalone motion, because we're not ready to decide on the MDU cases. Similar type of thing. This was also the reservation telephone companies' facilities were hit. They were hit by Northern Excavating. The same information I provided earlier about the companies is still valid in this case. In this case, the staff recommended fine was $5,500, and that was also mostly based on the escalator being in place from the previous other damages. So when we met for the work session, we talked about not using the escalator in this particular case. In this one, very similar, the locate was done. The damages of reservation telephone facilities did occur. But what was unique about this one is that we had the RTC came up and made their discussion, reservation telephone, our advocacy staff put their case together. But when Northern had their chance to make their case, they provided no evidence at all. And I counseled as much as you can, say, are you sure you don't want to present a case? And they didn't. And the ALJ also made the same point. So in this case, we have no evidence from Northern. And the only response they used was, you have our information from before. And we explained to them that one case doesn't transfer to the other. But I think, to be frank, the individual was, at that point, it just was tired of of telling us why he didn't do what he did, and so that's just... But the point is there was no evidence provided, and I think our resulting decision is fair, that requiring that Northern Excavating pay for the damages of $1,522.51 in this particular case. The fine has been set at $1,000, which, of course, is appropriate, as it would be the escalator removed out of it. And with this, if you total all this up then, so it'll be $9,000 that Northern Excavating is required to pay to the North Dakota General Fund for these two cases, and total of damages that they're required to pay to Reservation Telephone, $23,482, so totaling over $32,000 that this company is now liable to either the State General Fund or to Reservation Telephone. And so, as Commissioner Fedorchak pointed out, it's just, you know, the companies, if they would work better with the excavating companies, the people that the facilities are out there, I think they're very fair and amenable to work with it. I'm glad we got to resolution in this case, and I just hope that we don't see more of these in front of us, but it does send a message out there that we're going to follow the process, and it's just too big a risk out there. I just don't understand why some of the companies do this, but thank the staff for putting this together, and I think it's a very good resolution to what we've had in front of us in this case for quite some time.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I do, Madam Chairman. I didn't have this case very long in advance of the meeting, so I wish I had been able to notice this earlier and maybe discuss it with staff. But I see in the conclusions of law number 5, it basically is just a reiteration of a section of the Century Code, and part of it is the phrase that the excavator is liable for all damages. In the previous case, that kind of similar area is section 26 of our conclusions of law. In fact, they're identical. It just reiterates the same section of the Century Code. But then in the previous case, we go on to number 27 of conclusions of law, where we say Northern must reimburse RTC for their repair and restoration, their loss of product, and interruption of service, and if necessary, reasonable costs and attorney fees. We don't have that section in this case. Are we confident that it's just as good, just the fact that we're quoting that section of the Century Code, or in order to have the same weight, do we need to go back and add another section to our conclusion of law?
Actually, we talked about that earlier. In the just by us finding a judgment against, they are then liable for reimbursement of costs. The fact that we put it in one area and not the other, it doesn't change it. But we did talk about consistency going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for this particular case, it's all fine. But it's a great catch that we need to be consistent in how we're dealing with this in our cases.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Okay, moving on. Item BK3. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest in finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate the cases and issue a notice of consolidated hearing in Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., Advanced Termination of Prudence, Thunder Spirit Wind Project Application, case number PU14-843, and Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., Thunder Spirit Wind Project, Adams County, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU14-844.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In December of last year, MDU filed for an advanced determination of prudence and a certificate of public convenience and necessity to purchase and operate a 107.5-megawatt Thunder Spirit Wind Project to be located in Adams County. A consolidated public hearing in these two cases is scheduled to begin May 14, 2015, 8:30 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the Commission Hearing Room, 12th floor of the Capitol. I think that is incorrect. No, that's right. That's right. In the 12th floor of the Capitol, 600 East Boulevard, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58505. I was confusing myself because we're going out to Dickinson for another wind hearing. This is not for a wind hearing. This is for MDU to purchase the Thunder Spirit Wind, which was a previous siting hearing that we did down in the Hettinger area. So this one... MDU will come in and tell us why they think that it's appropriate for them to buy and operate this wind farm. The commission has previously issued a certificate of siting to Thunder Spirit. At that time, the cost they put in their letter of intent of the wind farm was $300 million. So it'll be interesting as we get into this hearing what the cost end up being to the company. MDU, of course, a regulated company that we have oversight on. Just some general thoughts that on ADP. Once again, advance termination and prudence to companies. It's something in North Dakota law that says they can come in and let the commission provide them our thoughts on what we think about the project. If we issue the ADP when they come back for a rate case, there's some amount of revenue that they're, quote, guaranteed. If we disallow the ADP, they can still go ahead and purchase it. But then when they come back to the rate case, it'd be perhaps a different setting. So I look forward to the hearing, and thanks, staff, for getting this put together.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just a couple comments on the application, just reading through it a little briefly. They have assumed that this project will have a 45% capacity factor, which is really high. It's got to be one of the highest that we've seen in North Dakota. And so I think that'll be an interesting discussion to have with the company on how they have confidence that 45% of the time, as Mike Diller describes this, 45% of the time, this project will be producing its nameplate capacity. So that's a significant claim in this case, and it'll be one that I'll be talking extensively with the company about. Also, they have said that it's more prudent for them to own it versus to have a power purchase agreement, and they are claiming it'll save their customers $30 million. So that's another point that I will explore with the company, and it is going to be an interesting hearing. They do note that they need to increase their peak demand by 100 megawatts in the next 5 years. They need 100 megawatts of peak demand resources, and this is part of their plan to meet that. And so these hearings always provide a good opportunity to discuss some of the bigger issues with the companies, and I'm looking forward to it.
Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. Item BK4, I move the commission approve Otter Tail Power Company's Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider, case number PU15-14.
Second.
A little background on the purpose of the Renewable Resource Adjustment, RRA, is to provide Otter Tail Power Company with cost recovery and return on its renewable wind energy investments, namely the wind farms in Langdon, Ashtabula, and Laverne. So every year the company files their updated costs for the rider. We review it to make sure it's appropriate. In this case, I think it's very appropriate. A little background, I guess, on the three wind farms. Langdon Wind Farm, roughly mid-2008, it came on board. Ashtabula, early 2009. And then Laverne came on, 2010, give or take. So the point is, when this thing first started, the cost was about 0.55 cents per kilowatt for the rider, and every year it has gone down in cost since all three have been put into place. And so last year it was about 0.45 cents, this year 0.352 cents per kilowatt. And part of the reason it's gone down is that some of the things in place for the renewable energy credits Otter Tail has been able to sell have lowered the cost of this project. Some of the production tax credits have come into play. North Dakota's share of the wind farm is 41%. And the riders, I was not initially a fan of riders because it just seems like you want to get a fixed cost, and I thought the riders would intend to trend up every year. But you know, they now have been going down. So it's good we put these riders into place. Every time we have a rate case with Otter Tail, we always think about rolling those riders into base rates. But I think the way it's being handled now is appropriate. And it's interesting because Otter Tail's wind has performed very, 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 very well. So this is certainly in order. And it's a reduction in rates for customers, roughly about a penny from last year.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I think I said that number wrong. That's not right, is it? A penny?
88 cents
a month. Yeah, as I was thinking, 88 cents a month is what the reduction should be. Thanks, Mike. Okay, item BK5. I move the commission close Public Service Commission J&J Oilfield Services, Inc., Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15-42.
Second.
You notice the motion says we close this case. Once again, our staff did a very good job of reviewing a case and has recommended this case be closed, not forwarded to the commission for action. A little background. In January of this year, a North Dakota one-call complaint was received by Enbridge Pipelines alleging that J&J Oilfield Service violated North Dakota Century Code by not calling ahead for a locate. When our crack staff was out doing the review of this case, there really was no evidence presented by Enbridge other than just their phone call. But when our staff reviewed it, it looks like J&J was removing a rock pile from a farmer's field in the area of the Enbridge pipeline. So it's easy to see Enbridge saw a company out there doing some work really close to their pipeline. They were concerned. They let our staff know about it. Staff reviewed it, and certainly there was no violation. And I agree with the staff because they're moving the rock pile. But once again, I think Enbridge could have talked to the company. Maybe there's a backstory here that we need to keep aware of. But it's good that Enbridge is watching their facilities that close. And I thank staff for making the recommendation. Certainly seems appropriate.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion?
Maybe Commissioner Crispin wants the contract with J&J to get some of the rocks off your property back home.
I don't have very many. And the ones that I do have, I've got them all spread out already.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Item BK6, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing and Dactel Communication LLC, designated eligible carrier application case number PU15-119.
Second.
Thank you. In March of 2015, Dactel filed an application for designation as an ETC in limited service areas, North Dakota. Dactel, of course, is a CLEC seeking ETC designation for the purpose of receiving federal funding through the new Federal Communication Commission's Rural Broadband Experiment Program. If you recall that we had just approved one of these for consolidated telephone here a couple meetings ago. In this particular case, Dactel is applying for the same type of dollars for the service to expand service in rural areas of Stutzman County. Anyone requesting a formal hearing on this has until May 6th to do this. If not, we can do this matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
For the portfolio holder, I was under the impression that there was a deadline for applying for this, and we've now exceeded that deadline. So are they still accepting applications?
That was a question I asked our crack staff, and the deadline that Consolidated had, I guess there's a different process they're applying for here, a different pot of money. So Dactel does not have the same deadline that Consolidated did. So I don't know if they reopened it or extended it, but yeah, it did seem odd, the same thing when we did the special meeting for Consolidated, then we see one of these. But Dactel says they've got a plan and there's different pots they're applying for.
It's a good thing about Washington, D.C. They have a lot of money. Always another pool there.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if this plays, because now Consolidated applied for it, and unless something comes up out of the ordinary, Dactel will more than likely be able to participate in the broadband experiment. We'll see if they can get more services out and rural Stutzman County, because I've heard a lot of concerns about some of those gaps that are out there, so it'll be interesting. But yeah, your point is right on. Do they ever shut the spigot off out there?
I thought you zapped the gap.
First wireless service.
That was a different gap.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion approved.
Okay, and finally today for me, BK7, I move the commission adopt the consent order in Public Service Commission Envision Land and Development LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU14-702.
Second.
Thank you. Envision Land Development is a registered corporation with offices located in Seattle, Washington. In August of 2014, commission received a one-call complaint from Verendry Electric. Our staff did a review of the case, and based investigation concluded that in August of 2014, Envision began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code, intersection of 16th Street and north of 37th Avenue, Southwest Minot, North Dakota. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that a facility electric line was hit and damaged during the excavation, and the damage was approximately $1,300. The operator has been reimbursed for damages, so the company has paid Verendi for the damages. Two customers lost services for 2 hours as a result of the damage. Based on the investigation, concluded that Envision violated their North Dakota Century Code by failing to conduct the excavation in a careful and prudent manner. So it's very similar to what Commissioner Fedorchuk said, is that when you request to locate, then that's only half the job. You have to do the excavation careful and prudent. You can't just be hitting facilities. So the company paid Verendry for the damages, and this consent order they agreed to, they're going to pay $700 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission, which, of course, goes to the general fund. This was the company's first time in front of us. They paid for the damage, and it seems to be a very good consent order. So thanks, staff, for getting that taken care of.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And I would just add that I withdrew item BK8 only because we were hoping we'd receive the official signed copy original by the meeting today. They sent us a fax copy, and it still hadn't came, so I didn't want to vote on it until we had the actual signed copy from the individual. So I'm sure we'll see BK8 the next meeting. Or if we have a special one, Victor, put it on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, just looking ahead on our calendar a bit, we have a formal hearing tomorrow in Watford City on the Basin Electric Lonesome Creek Station Phase 3 project, another generation facility, a peaking plant out in Watford City, third one on this particular location. Then next week, Monday, we have a formal hearing on the Meadowlark Midstream pipeline up in Divide and Burke counties. It's about a 40-mile new pipeline up in that area. The hearing there is in Crosby. And then in mid-April, we start with our public input sessions on the MDU natural gas rate increase request. We have 2 days of public input meetings in Williston, Bismarck, Dickinson, and Lake Region, Devil's Lake, Minot, Valley City, Monday the 13th and Tuesday the 14th, both at noon and in the evening, both days. Wait, no, noon the first day and
I think it's night the first and then noon.
Must be 7 p.m. the first, yeah, 7 p.m. on Monday and 12 noon the following day, so people can come either after work or during the noon hour. And then two more formal hearings that week in Watford City and Williston on two more pipeline projects. So we will be on the road that week. I hope the legislature has finished our budget by then. All right. So do we have any questions from the audience?
A couple of quick questions on the Demicks Lake plant.
Mm-hmm.
Because they asked for you to go ahead with the siting and everything like that, but said they're going to delay the plant, how confident is the company that they're actually going to build it eventually?
That would be a question for the company. I haven't talked to them about that. I think it really just depends on what happens in the next few months. But they definitely wanted to move ahead with the permitting process, and so I think that's a good sign.
Do you know offhand how much natural gas processing is done in the state? How much plants are online? How much?
Oh, that's a great question, Dave. I'm sorry I didn't print out the latest stats from Justin Kriegstedt's website today. He's tracks that really closely, but we could look together after the meeting and find that.
Commissioner Kalk, how many cases then are pending against Northern Excavating? Do you have a rough number?
Are six cases where MDU has submitted concerns with Northern Excavating.
And the hearing will be?
Well, actually, that's on scheduling today. So that's on scheduling today, I guess, is the best way to
tell me something. My green light went out. I know. Well, that's probably me, too.
And sticking with Commissioner Kalk, if you could talk a little bit more about this FERC technical conference, what kind of things are you going to be bringing to that conference?
Yeah, the technical conference is broke down into three three areas. The FERC commissioners opened it up with their comments about, you know, I'm sure they'll say we're happy to be here and we want to hear your input, but it's focused on the central region of the country, what concerns are going to be out there on the implementation of the Clean Power Plan, the CO2 reduction plan. So the one session is going to be on reliability, and one session is going to be on the infrastructure that's going to be required, and the third session is on the input of wholesale markets. So I'm going to be talking in the infrastructure. And so I think what you'll hear is the first part will be reliability, talking about concerns, shutting down the coal plants, what that could do to reliability in the power grid. You know, MISO has come out now that they think we're energy deficient next year because of some of the advanced retirements of coal fleets. So there'll be discussion about that. So I'll talk in there, I guess, the concerns that North Dakota has about how this could affect reliability of the North Dakota power grid, how integration of these regional transmission organization, how that's affecting North Dakota, as far as if they change the way energy moves, how that could affect us, the generation. I mean, all those kind of things, I guess, will lay it out. And I just found out about this actually yesterday, so kind of still putting my thoughts together. But the part about pipelines is what really got me thinking, too, about some of the discussion I made about the railroads, that depending how this clean power plan goes, you have potentially advanced coal retirements. And then so people then would migrate to natural gas. But then with the challenges out there with siting pipelines, it's not a guaranteed that you're going to be able to site these natural gas pipelines in the time required to build the gas generation where you need it. And then the grid is built on coal plants are here, power lines go to the right need to be. If you shut down the coal plants, that you could have stranded investment for your transmission lines. So try to really refine that down to the North Dakota viewpoint, how that might tie into our region. Take our comments that we filed with the EPA and give those directly to the FERC. I'll do the verbal testimony, give them a handout, and then be there to answer their questions. But I think the big things are just how the infrastructure that we may have could become stranded investments, how the cost is going to go up, and how if we don't make this move correctly, the reliability is going to be gone. There's legal action, I think, that's going to happen no matter what. I really intend to stay out of that. I would like to make it clear to the FERC that from the three of us, we really think that applying with a regional plan for a SIP is not a good idea. To make that clear to the FERC that we think it should be states' rights, and that's it. And, of course, my colleagues, if there's anything special they want me to do, we haven't had a chance to talk about it, but I'll certainly anything that they want to add. And we put in the press release going out, we've asked for any public comment that people have. I'm happy to pass that along. We've already collected data from all the investor owns and our G&Ts for the state. Long answer to your question, Dave.
Okay.
I'd be happy to loan you my whammer if you want to bring it.
I'll take it.
Dave, I just looked up on his website. The total capacity as of the end of 2014 was 1.4 billion MCF.
All right. Just a quick thing on the pipeline project. Did the company say when they were hoping to break ground?
They did. They have a very optimistic time frame, in my opinion. They hope to break ground on the line in October of this year with completion a year later and in service in 2016.
That's if everything fell, not necessarily but North Dakota, but all along.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
And is
I think, you know, I don't necessarily view that as unreasonable here because we've got a process that we follow and have worked through that in that time frame in the past. We're not seeing that happen in other states.
That's all I got.
Anything else? Okay.
Madam Chairman, along those lines, do you have an idea, like the time frame for the Williston-Kildare-Mandan meetings? I mean, have you?
We will be setting those in our admin portion, probably. Victor or Julie, have we looked at any potential dates? Just like starting when?
Mid-May.
Mid-May and going into mid-June, I'm assuming. Yeah, 3 months. So late spring, early summer. Yep.
But we typically just take a short recess here, and then we come back in our admin, and we're going to try to select some. So you can wait around. And
we'll know them today. We'll know them before noon, the dates. Okay. Any other questions?
You have them on your calendar.
All right. We will take a brief break and resume our admin meeting at, let's say, 10 after 11.